WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Zippy the Pinhead is having a hard time getting by in Cuba. No McDonald's, no Ricky Lake, none of the American consumer culture he thrives on. Zippy is the creation of comic book artist Bill Griffith. He started drawing Zippy as an underground comic 25 years ago. Now Zippy is a syndicated strip featured in about 200 papers. There are two main characters in the strip, Zippy and Griffith's alter ego Griffy, the alienated intellectual. Zippy's adventures in Cuba are now being chronicled in Griffith's strip. You can expect to see more from Griffith about Cuba sometime soon in The New Yorker. Bill Griffith told me why he wanted to go to Cuba.
My reason for wanting to go to Cuba has a lot to do with the fact that, as far as I understand the world, Cuba is one of the few places on the planet untouched by American consumer culture. I wanted to see what that was like.
It was hard to believe, huh?
Yeah. I think it's Cuba and Burma. I think those are the only two countries that don't have a McDonald's. And I was just curious. I mean, separate from everything, every other reason that most people would want to see Cuba for, that was a big part of my reason. I wanted to scare the Zippy in me.
Did you find a lot of pop remnants of the past from the pre-revolutionary era?
Yeah, that was a fascinating part especially about Havana. Havana seems to be this very strangely decaying yet perfectly preserved museum of the past 500 years, going back to the 1500s, I guess, when it was founded. But the last century especially, there are parts of Havana that are completely frozen in the 60s, actually, which is most of Havana, since that was when the revolution happened. And then there's complete sections that are the 50s, the 40s, the 30s, the 20s, the teens. It's literally a cultural museum. It was great. I loved it.
Well, in your comics, the characters find remains of, all the remains of the gangster era have been enshrined. You know, Meyer Lansky's hotel room is still intact.
Right.
What, Al Capone's
right.
place is a restaurant now?
Al Capone's resort is... Actually, Al Capone's resort is a school, but across the street is a restaurant called Casa de Al,
which, that's great.
Which I think was one of his houses, yeah.
Uh-huh.
It was a place where he did most of his rum running, is what I was told.
Did you
The gangster era is well-preserved and kind of revered, actually. It's a strange... I mean, Cuba, they're trying to encourage tourism, so it might be a function of that, or it might be just the general... just sort of respect for their own history, that they don't shy away from that part of their past. In fact, they talk about it with a strange mix of pride, I guess because they overcame it, obviously. They revolted against it and you know, beat it out of their country. But the gangster era is pretty apparent all throughout Cuba. You can see evidence of it everywhere.
Did you go to Meyer Lansky's hotel room?
Yes, which you can rent for $200 a night. It looks exactly as if he just, you know, had breakfast and, you know, the maid just cleaned up and he left. I was given a little tour of it by the bellman. I remember one weird moment when he was, once again, the tourism that's taking root in Cuba is very sort of in an awkward stage. So the bellman was doing his best to give me a guided tour of Meyer Lansky's suite, but I sensed he was exaggerating and making mistakes all the time. For instance, and I knew this was true when he pointed to a clearly faded reproduction of it of a Degas painting and told me this was an original Degas that Meyer Lansky owned. I mean, it was faded. You know, there was no yellow or red in it. It was just the blue left from being exposed to the sun for 25 years, 30 years.
You went down to Cuba to do a comic strip about a place that doesn't have American pop culture. And, you know, it's very amusing to find this absence. At the same time, you were exposed to things that are really serious and tragic. You were there during the last of the Balseros, the rafters, who were trying to get out of Cuba and make it to Florida. How did you deal with the more tragic aspects of what you saw?
Well, I tried not to avoid it, for one thing. I tried to seek it out and examine it. But it's a very poignant country. I mean, the tragedy is right on the surface. Even when you're just walking around Havana, the feeling that that you're witnessing the beginning of an end game is very prevalent. You feel like within a few years, everything is going to be very different and potentially much worse. I remember I interviewed a couple of balseros on the beach at Cojimar just as they were about to leave. I was there like 2 days before that ended. And there was a fatalism that was very disturbing in their descriptions of why they were leaving. They didn't have any great hopes. They just wanted to get out, but they had no particular feeling of that there was a future for them.
Did you feel equipped to deal with this tragedy as somebody who usually cartoons about pop culture?
Not in the slightest, no. I was constantly overwhelmed by what was happening around me. And, I mean, I would go back to my hotel room at night and just sort of quiver for an hour or two. And I found myself actually crying a few times by myself, just at the intensity of what was going on around me.
Did you talk to any cartoonists in Cuba?
Yeah, I went. There's a place, there's sort of a place where they hang out called it's a writers union building. And I met three or four of them and actually went to one of their homes and visited them for a few hours. It's a very weird thing to be a cartoonist in Cuba right now because there's basically no publishing. There's no printing, there's no paper, there's no ink. So everybody's on hold. And I couldn't help but imagine how I would be able to handle such a thing. I'm so used to, doing a strip and just having it get in the pipeline and, it's printed and then the next strip is printed and it just goes on and on. In Cuba, it just doesn't happen. For this one cartoonist I met, his work hadn't been printed in 2 years. And I said, "What do you do?" And he says, "Well, I keep drawing." And I said, "How do you make a living?" And he said, "He does caricatures of tourists in resort areas." And I said, "But you're a well-known cartoonist." And he said, "Yeah, well, before I start the caricature, I say, I am Francisco Blanco, and I'm a successful cartoonist, and my strip has been running 30 years. And he tells the title of the strip, and he says, "I just want you to know before I start your caricature, I want you to know who I am." Then he does the caricature.
It's kind of depressing.
Yeah, very depressing.
My guest is Bill Griffith, creator of the comic strip Zippy. Griffith traveled to Cuba last fall and is now drawing Zippy's adventures there. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. Bill Griffith is my guest, and he does the comic strip Zippy the Pinhead. And right now he's doing Zippy in Cuba, and it's based on his impressions from a trip to Cuba that he took last fall. Let's do a little bit of a flashback here and talk about the early days of Zippy.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us how you first created Zippy the Pinhead?
Well, Zippy's actually 25 years old this year.
Wow.
The first, hard to believe, isn't it?
He's really becoming a man.
That's right. Well, people used to ask me how old is Zippy, and I would say, well, he's either 14 or 35. But I guess now I could say he's 25. Zippy started in 1970, very casually, in an underground comic book called Real Pulp. And the assignment, such as it was from the editor back in those weirdo hippie days, was to do a really weird love story. That's what he told me to do, this guy. So I thought, well, I'll do a love triangle with a quote normal person and two really strange people, and I picked pinheads because I'd been looking at circus sideshow posters and reading about people like that, and I just decided to make it this love triangle called "I Fell for a Pinhead, but He Made a Fool Out of Me." little knowing that this was the beginning of a 25-year career.
What is a pinhead?
The word pinhead is a circus sideshow term for what is medically known as a microcephalic, which means small skull. A pinhead is a person born with, I don't exactly know which part of their brain is missing. I think it's the frontal lobes are missing. And so they have a kind of childlike personality. They tend to be very sort of happy-go-lucky and pleasant, and highly verbal, very talkative, and they speak in very rapid-fire non-sequiturs. So now you know where Zippy came from.
Right. Well, how did you use all those characteristics to develop Zippy's persona?
Well, at first, Zippy was very much like a real microcephalic, several of whom I had met at that time in the early 70s. He was just a disconnected series of impulses, basically. It took a number of years for his persona to develop into something more than that. If I had kept that up, I would have gone crazy. Over the years, I changed Zippy, I think, from just a sort of dazed goofball into a more human character, and also a vehicle for satire.
Can you tell me about one of the microcephalics, one of the pinheads who you hung around with in the days that you were creating Zippy?
Well, there was one whose name was Dooley, who I met before I came to California. I met him in Connecticut. And he had a job in a plastic bag factory. And a friend of mine was a cab driver who drove him to and from work every day. So I asked my friend if I could come along for the ride one day. So I got into the cab, and we went and picked up Dooley, and he got into the back seat, and I had never seen him before in my life. And before we even were introduced, he looked at me and said very intensely, "Are you still an alcoholic?" And I took out my notebook and started taking notes, of course. And before the end of the trip, he had decided that Walter Cronkite was God, and he was explaining to me just why that was true. It was just a rapid-fire series of incredibly dizzying non sequiturs, which left me so full of material that it's kept me going for 25 years.
Bill Griffith, your most famous phrase, which is one of Zippy's phrases, is, "Are we having fun yet?" And that has worked its way into Bartlett's quotations. You pleased about that?
Yes, finally I can end arguments by lifting the 25-pound Bartlett's quotations and heaving it at my opponent and saying, "Here, read this." For years and years, people have been saying, "Are we having fun yet?" and asking me if I invented it, and then sometimes being a bit skeptical because it's so much in the culture at this point. I've even seen other people literally taking credit, including Carol Burnett, of all people, who said it. She said in a 1980 movie, but I said it. And I think the first time I did it was in 1976 or 7, on the cover of a Zippy comic book.
How'd you come up with it?
Well, Zippy was cavorting around the pool of San Simeon, the Hearst Castle in California. He had gotten away from a tour group, and he was just flipping out and running amok through the mansion. And at one moment, he's sliding down the banister of the mansion into the pool. And as he gets towards the bottom, he looks sort of frightened and very happy, and he screams out, "Am I having fun yet?" It just seemed like the right sort of existential thought at the moment. And I meant it just the way it sounds. It's sort of two-edged, like, are we having fun yet? It's if you have to ask, I guess you aren't, or maybe you are, or, are you questioning the very nature of fun, or what is fun, what is happiness, et cetera, et cetera. So it seemed like the right question to ask.
Bill Griffith, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Well, thanks for having me, Terry.
Bill Griffith is the creator of the comic strip Zippy. This is Fresh Air.